You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
That is what makes democracy great. The power in a democracy is derived from the people. It resides in the people. These individuals that we have elected don't hold those seats in perpetuity.
Now, the Maggie Dawn Show continues.
Why are we cutting Medicaid, which is overwhelmingly popular with both Democrats and Republicans?
From Congress and courts to burgers and baseball.
You know what we need in the United States is more paperwork.
Once again, here's lawyer and economist Maggie Dawn.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network, and happy Friday afternoon to one and all. We made it through yet another week in Trump 2.0. You wink and you will miss news like the news we spent the last hour discussing. Folks, if you missed any of the dramatic greeting between former U.S. Attorney James Santella and myself of some of the Todd Blanche interview of Ghislaine Maxwell, don't worry, you can find our dramatic greeting in the podcast of this fine program. You can find that wherever you find your favorite podcasts or at civicmedia.us/shows. Right now, I'm really excited to bring on to the program one of my favorite guests, the chief economist at the Center on Budget and Policy, Benga Ajilore. Welcome back to the show, Benga. It's great to have you.
Thanks for having me back, Maggie.
Wonderful. Lots of action in the area of economics. Of course, we have the Trump on-again, off-again trade wars, escalating tariff levels. We've got Donald Trump's attacks on Jerome Powell. We've got Donald Trump threatening to fire one of the other members of the Federal Reserve Board, ostensibly to stack it with friendlies. All kinds of action. I wanted to just start with Jerome Powell, the chair of the Federal Reserve Board, had a very important statement this morning. They're all in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. I call it summer camp for econ dorks. They're all there. It's a symposium of central bankers. Jerome Powell had some interesting comments related to interest rates. Can you tell us what the upshot of what he said was, Benga?
It was really fascinating because this is going to be his basically his last speech that he's going to give, because his term at chair is going to end in May of next year. And so one of the fascinating things is he was talking about the dual mandate of the Fed, that they have a mandate to full employment, you know, have people have many jobs as possible, and in price stability to keep inflation low. And so it's been a very delicate dance for the last couple of years. And so what he talked about was that there was some softness in the labor market, so that he's thinking about lowering interest rates to deal with that. But at the same time, we have these tariffs, which I know we're going to get into a lot of, that's going to cause increases in price. And so the question is, how do you balance that trade-off? And what he's been says in the speech is basically he's not as concerned about the tariffs creating long-lasting inflation, that there will be a price increase, but they'll be able to kind of navigate that. But he is worried about the softness in the labor market, which we've seen over the last 3 months. And so what's fascinating about that speech is him talking about how he's balancing that trade-off.
Yeah, and the worst thing that you can, aside from being in an outright recession, the worst thing you can have in an economy is stagflation, which generically refers to where you're seeing job losses, in other words, higher unemployment rates, and increasing inflation, and again, referred to as stagflation. This has been difficult for the Fed. This has been a very touchy time. So his comments were very interesting in this broader context. All of this happening as many of our public companies are having their public earnings calls with analysts from the biggest banks in the world, as well as their shareholders, effectively a quarterly report about how the business is doing. And the world's largest retailer, Walmart, had one such earnings call. There's been a lot of reporting about it. As Benga and I know, earnings calls sound like gibberish. It's like a lot of fancy words, but the meaning behind the words is actually pretty simple. It's just the way that CEOs speak when they're talking to financial analysts. So what Benga and I are going to do is we're going to take some clips of Walmart CEO and other top-level Walmart folks in this last earnings call and translate it. Because here is the thing, folks. We've been talking about this for a long time. The tariffs, because of Donald Trump's on-again and off-again approach, have not in any way, shape, or form come to their full fruition or impact yet. And in fact, many of the most devastating tariff levels Donald Trump has pushed off. In other words, he's announced them, and then within days, he's reverted back to a lower tariff level. We do have now, overall, the highest tariff level our country has seen in decades. But again, those impacts haven't fully factored into our economy yet. But what we do know is that businesses have a varied ability to react to increasing supply costs, or the tariff pressures, generically speaking. And it is the largest businesses in the world that are best positioned to be able to absorb those. And so it is relevant to look at what Walmart CEO, the largest retailer in the world with the greatest bargaining power of any retailer in the world, to try to keep their suppliers from jacking up their supply costs. So hearing what this gentleman had to say about the impacts of tariffs is really important. So Benga and I are going to break it down so that you know how to interpret some of the gobbledygook you hear by economics journalists and CEOs on earnings calls. Let's take the first Walmart cut.
With regard to our U.S. pricing decisions, given tariff-related cost pressures, we're doing what we said we would do. We're keeping our prices as low as we can for as long as we can. Our merchants have been creative and acted with urgency to avoid what would have been additional pressure for our customers and members. They've done a terrific job managing pricing and mix across merchandise categories. They managed to generate rollbacks, they've made good quantity and flow decisions, and they've set us up well as we start the back half of the year. As it relates to what we're experiencing with customers and members here in the U.S., their behavior's been generally consistent. We aren't seeing dramatic shifts. The way things have played out so far, the impact of tariffs has been gradual enough that any behavioral adjustments by the customer have been somewhat muted. But as we replenish inventory at post-tariff price levels, we've continued to see our costs increase each week, which we expect will continue into the third and fourth quarters. Not surprisingly, we see more adjustments in middle and lower income households than we do with higher income households. In discretionary categories where item prices have gone up, we see a corresponding moderation in units at the item level as customers switch to other items or, in some cases, categories.
Oh, Bega, it's like the perfect snippet because he's saying some really important stuff, but it just sounds like techno speak. What did you hear in that clip, Bega? And then since I had the privilege of listening to these clips ahead of time, I can fill in the gaps. What were you hearing top line from the Walmart CEO's comments?
I love listening to that. And there's a certain words that jump out. It's like the first word that jumped out to me was pressure. He said pressure a couple times. That talks about how the tariffs impact businesses. That you think about when you get pressure, you try to relieve it. Then the other thing they talked about was, where it was like quantity and flow.
Yes. When
they were talking about how they were able to adjust to the price, the tariffs.
Yes. So
it's not that they couldn't, it wasn't that they were raising prices, but they shift the quantity or they shift the flow. Like, oh, this is how they're changing behavior in terms of being able to continue to sell stuff. But the biggest thing that actually jumped out at me was he mentioned, and this is the first time I've listened to it, but it was just like moderation by lower and moderate yes. income households, but high income households were spending. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, there's so much in that right there, because what it says that this is impacting low and moderate households, and then high income households, they are usually not Walmart shoppers. They shop at other places, but the fact that they're coming to Walmart tells you what's happening. That if they're coming to Walmart to try to find lower prices, that means that that shows the impact.
Yes.
And then the other thing was they talked about timing, how they were able to adjust to the tariffs in the first half of this year.
Yep.
Because what we saw in the beginning of this year, there was a lot of front loading and try to get ahead of the tariffs so that when the tariffs did hit, they were able to sell at a price. And then now they said that we have to kind of replenish the post-tariff price.
Post-tariff means, price levels, yep.
Exactly.
Replenishing so that's, inventory.
Exactly, which means prices are going up in quarter three and quarter four. And so be aware.
Be aware.
Prices are going up. Yeah.
These guys speak in code, and what Dr. Edgelori said is exactly right. Those were my notes. They're trying to absorb the impacts. We've kept our prices as low as we can for as long as we can, which means code. We're now passing it on to folks. They talk about inventory control and targeting pricing, volume targets. Merchants acted with urgency relating to pricing and mix, quantity and flow decisions, which means Walmart, with all of its market power, effectively stocked up inventory at pre-tariff pricing. They have been trying to move the mix of products being sold to customers to keep their profit margins as high as possible while reducing the quantity of the items that they have to absorb the tariff costs on for as long as they could, right? That's all of that jazz. But ultimately, prices are going up. That's the post-tariff price levels, quote unquote, and customers are responding slowly. The behavior has been consistent so far, except he reveals that the impact of tariffs have been gradual enough that behavioral adjustments by the customer have been somewhat muted, except for middle and lower income households. He's telling you, middle and lower income households are getting screwed. And they're not even shopping at Walmart. They have to change what they're buying. Now we see rich folks showing up at Walmart. Boy, yeah, there is price pressure getting passed on to consumers. It's just fascinating. I think we've got time for one more. This is a short one. Let's take the next Walmart cut.
Importantly, as we begin Q3, momentum has persisted and our inventory is at a healthy level, up about 4%. The year-over-year increase in inventory is primarily attributable to higher cost of imported goods and timing of receipts. In this tariff-impacted period, we're closely monitoring customer demand and managing quantity decisions as we measure the price elasticity of impacted items.
Benga, again, it's code, but it's pretty simple. You want to take a crack at that one.
So they use the magic word elasticity.
Yep.
And so elasticity of demand is how much are people responsive to price changes? So that's basically the $1 million question. And that's what they're trying to figure out, you know, customer behavior. They're talking about demand and like decisions that they have to make, which is based on the elasticity of demand. How responsive to price changes? Price goes up, demand is going to go down, but by how much? And that's what they need to figure out.
And except for products that have fairly inelastic demand curves, which means customers so need the products, they can't shift their purchases to a lower grade or cheaper substitute product. And yeah, retailers like Walmart, they damn well want to know what products remain with robust demand, even when prices are rising. And you think about what Walmart sells and the essentialness to so many households, that's what he's indicating. The way I'll put it is this. Hey, maybe customers will just be forced to absorb some of these price costs. You also referencing holding more inventory, the inventory now costing more as they look at cost of goods sold. We're going to have to take a little bit of a break and come back to this. And we're going to tie all of this. The reason that we're focusing on Walmart is that if the largest retailer in the world is now passing tariff-created price increases onto consumer, and we know that that is impacting lower and middle income folks the most, and we know that Walmart is signaling that there will be more cost increases coming, what this means for Wisconsin's family farms and small business owners and even medium business sized owners across this state is quite dire. We're going to continue this discussion with the chief economist at the Center on Budget and Policy, Dr. Benga Edgelori, and me, your economist on the radio, your friendly host, Maggie Dawn, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Well, Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Get your questions ready. We got Ask Maggie coming up at 5:30, where you can ask me anything. Send your questions in now at 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Right now, I've got economist Dr. Benga Adjelori. He is the chief economist at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. We're dissecting Walmart's earnings call yesterday because in and amongst the gibberish are some really important things. Because if the world's largest retailer is now admitting in public they're passing along some of the terror of Donald Trump's tariffs to regular consumers, and that lower and middle income families are now not buying certain products and have to change their behaviors, it means that the tariff terror has come to your family's pocketbook. Don't believe the gibberish is indecipherable. It is actually pretty basic stuff, and Benga and I are here to help you understand. We're going to then take those last few snippets of this earnings call and tell you what that might portend for Wisconsin family farms and other small businesses. So Jacob, we've got three more cuts. I'm just going to take them one after another, and then Dr. Adjelori and I will tell you what they all mean. Let's take cut three.
And we expect merchandise category mix to continue to be a headwind. While the cost of goods backdrop remains fluid, it appears clearer directionally than a quarter ago, although still unsettled. We await final tariff resolution across some of our largest import markets.
No kidding. Cut four.
When we last released our earnings, we were roughly 3 weeks into this new tariff environment. I think I would argue very strongly that we've navigated that very well, both in terms of managing the impact on our financial statements, but also minimizing the impact to our customers and members.
I bet he managed the impact on the financial statements. And the final cut, cut five.
I was wondering if you could elaborate on the price changes
this is a question
that you started
from an analyst.
To make this quarter and the consumer response. Doug, I think you talked about maybe some elasticity at the item level that you were starting to see. And then how do we think about the general philosophy across categories? For example, I think it was notable that rollbacks and grocery being up 30% right now. Do you see opportunities to lean in on price, perhaps in certain categories, to, I guess, offset the inflationary pressure the consumer is seeing in other places? Thanks so much.
Yeah, from a business model point of view, the fact that we have businesses like advertising and membership growing obviously help with flexibility as it relates to when we decide to absorb part of a tariff cost increase.
Super fascinating. Benga, the highlights from those three cuts for you.
So the first one, that first cut, I heard the word headwinds.
Yep.
And so headwinds, you know, translated to English is like, oh no, something bad's going to happen. That's a headwind. And so, and then he talked about something that I get into a little bit more, is this uncertainty.
Yes.
It talked about basically waiting on, I think it was like tariff certainty, but basically what they're talking about is they wanted all the trade deals to be done so they know what is the tariff for each of these countries. Because he said it's been off again, on again, up and down. And so that you can't make decisions when you don't know what's settled. So getting to the point, it's like, hopefully that will get settled and then we know what to do. And then there's a lot of talk about category mix.
Yes.
And so it's like, oh, how do we shift what we sell, what we put out in terms of prices? And then I didn't quite catch it at the end, but he said something about these other businesses, the flexibility of these other businesses to help us in terms of the pricing. So it's like, it's not just Walmart as a grocery store, as a store to sell stuff, but Walmart has other businesses, which then they could kind of take the hit there so they don't have to big prices there. And so it's just fascinating to see the opportunities for them to adjust to this tariff, but ultimately prices are going to rise.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And Dr. Adjelori, would it be okay if you stuck around for a little bit after the bottom of the hour? Because I do want to relate this back to our family farms and small and medium-sized businesses here in Wisconsin. But I wanted to make some of these points because I think translating this stuff for people is so important. we heard we expect merchandise category mix to continue to be a headwind, meaning trying to figure out what it is that they put on their shelves to keep their profits up. In other words, what are those products with inelastic demand curves? In other words, that you will continue to buy no matter how high the price gets, and shifting what they put on their shelves to products that continue to garner large demand, even if you've got some price increases. That's that, again, that merchandise category mix. Until we see tariff resolution across our largest import markets, he's talking about rising prices, and we don't know how high they're going to go until we see what the end state is. Cost of goods backdrop remains fluid while it remains clear directionally. What that means is the cost of goods that we sell to you, the American public, is going up, and we have no idea how high those will actually end up. Again, it's fascinating here, this talking about minimizing impacts to our financial statements and customers. It means, yes, we will engage in creative booking of things on our statements to keep profits high for our shareholders while still trying to ensure that customers have high demand. And again, you heard elasticity coming up. Changes to offset the inflationary pressure consumers are seeing in other categories. You're going to triage your products and the price levels that you can sell those product at to keep customers in your stores and profits high. And you will look to these other business lines, just as Dr. Edgelori said, to continue to have high profits. If this is happening at Walmart, financial statement management, product mix realignment, pressuring their supply chains to keep it low, absorbing where they could, but now they're passing it on to the cost and the detriment of middle and lower income families. It is going to crush family farms and small businesses. Dr. Edgelori is going to stick around for a little bit longer. We'll explain why after these brief messages, and then we'll have another round of Ask Maggie. Stay tuned. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Just want to give some love to some of our listeners participating in our discussion via the text line. John from Madison, Mark from the SAC, Cam from Appleton, Dave from New Berlin. Thanks, gentlemen. I have been joined for this past half hour, and he has been gracious enough to stick with all of us. Chief Economist from the Center on Budget and Policy, Dr. Benga Edgelori. He's been on the show a number of times. We always have these, I hope, really helpful discussions for all of you great listeners. We've been basically decoding, translating the Walmart CEO's last earnings call, which just happened yesterday. The upshot of it is, hey, we've been all right at, you know, creative financial statement management and absorbing some of the increasing prices, but more of it's going to get passed on to consumers, and lower and middle income consumers will probably feel the pinch the most. We have no idea where it's all ending up, but don't worry, we've stockpiled inventory. We will change what we stock on the shelves in order to keep our profits up and our shareholders happy. It's what it is. If this is what's happening with the largest retailer in the world, it's got to be causing pain for small and medium-sized businesses across this state and beyond, as well as family farms, part of the backbone of the economy in Wisconsin. I would argue that small and medium-sized businesses, including manufacturers, as well as family farms and larger farms, are the Wisconsin economy. And Dr. Edgelori, before the break, we were talking about relating for folks. And let's just start with people getting ready for back to school and as we roll into the holidays. What does the earnings call and the portions of it that we've been listening to speak first to just an average consumer, an average shopper at Walmart? Because so many of our listeners, I shop at Walmart. What can folks be expecting to see perhaps changing in their local Walmarts over the next 6 months?
So simply, you're just going to see higher prices. Now, some prices are going to be much higher, and some of them are going to be a little bit lower, depending on, as we heard from the earnings call, they're going to be able to try to shift that mix. But I think I want to take a little step back.
Sure.
Because when we talk about tariffs, there's so much news going on literally every day. Like in the last hour, Trump announced that he's going to put tariffs on furniture. So, I mean, that's just, and so, but I, the way to think about tariffs is that there are tax on goods that we buy that just from other countries. In January 2025, this rate was 2.5%. Now it's 18.6%. So we've seen a ninefold increase in the rate of taxes on a lot of goods. So that's why over the next 6 months, we're going to see higher prices. And the way I think about this is right now it's back to school season. And so we're going to see higher prices on like index cards, binders, folders. We think about, you know, you have kids who are growing, so you have to buy new clothes. Apparel is going to, price is going to go up. And so the way to think about this is just like, okay, what is it that we have to prioritize? Like, what do we have to spend on now? And what purchase can we wait in October, November, December?
Right.
Because all across the board, prices are going to go up.
Here's, and I'm going to, there's one other thing that I think consumers can nearly certainly expect to see at Walmart is, did you have a favorite particular brand of something and all of a sudden that's not there? Were you used to seeing a product that you love being promoted in the like Walmart rollbacks where they actually roll prices down from what they, the list price, and all of a sudden you don't see that product ever anymore promoted through a rollback? You're going to see some shifting. Maybe a particular brand of product disappears entirely. That's part of that product mix management. And when you pair product mix management, meaning, well, this supplier has a tariff applied to it, so we're going to dump that supplier and we're going to go to this different supplier. Hence, you see a different brand. Or if they identify that there is a particular product or brand that consumers seem to not reduce their buying as high as the price goes, they may shift the mix that way, or raise prices even more on products where demand stays fairly steady to make up for smaller margins on other products. When you are a retailer that sells such a broad range of products, as is Walmart, you can engage in some of those financial, it's almost like gamesmanship. If you know you got to hit an overall margin of X throughout your entire product mix, well, you can maneuver around that. Again, I think folks, it's not just higher prices, but you'll see some different mix of stuff on the shelves. Walmart also in that earnings call, and it's a little in the weeds, they talk about using the rollback very strategically to keep customers engaged. So, you know, they may be lowering prices or promising the rollback on a different product or a different set of products, but you're going to see those prices going up on some other things. So they're going to be creative to try to keep people in those aisles and shopping. But again, the overall picture is stuff's going to be more expensive, and it might not be the stuff that you're exactly looking for. Anything that I got wrong there, Dr. Agilori?
No, you did a great job with that, because I think about, you know, I personally like orange marmalade, and there was a time when they actually like didn't have it when prices were going up during inflation. And then also there's quality difference between like the major brand and the store brand. So in my head, I'm thinking my orange marmalade that I usually get might be not there, or it's going to be the other one that's lower quality.
That is different product mix, and maybe you only see grape jelly and you know, like all those stuff, because I like that little orange marmalade with like the blue plaid top on it, and sometimes I can't find that because they import that stuff, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
And those are the sorts of things that it'll show up in a very real way for customers. And I think, you know, whether I'm talking to folks like yourself, Dr. Agilori, or folks that advocate for small and startup businesses, they talk about flexibility. Walmart has the most of any retailer on the planet. It's their bargaining power, their leverage with suppliers. They can go to any new supplier they want because everybody wants to sell their stuff to Walmart, right? They have a diverse product line, so they can engage in this sort of gamesmanship about products where there are shrinking margins versus products with inelastic demand curves and increasing margins. They can do that stuff. That sort of economy, and they can buy inventory ahead and warehouse it, all those sorts of things. Dr. Angelori, let's start connecting the dots between what that earnings, so we talked about what that earnings calls meant for just regular families in Wisconsin and what they can expect to see in a Walmart. Now let's talk about what does that earnings call mean when you are a smaller business or a medium-sized business, and then I want to get into what's going on with our family farmers. What does that call portend for small and medium and growing businesses in Wisconsin?
So with these small, medium-sized businesses, they, to the point that you made, they don't have that flexibility. There's no product mix. There's no flexibility. There's no looking at your other businesses to try to do that. You have the suppliers that you work with, and then they have, and you have to have the countries that you import supplies from, because one of the things about tariffs, this is not on final goods. This is on everything. This is on, and we'll get to it when we talk about the farmers, but steel, aluminum, all these inputs that go into business. And so that costs are going up, and you just have to eat that cost. And you know, a lot of these small, medium-sized businesses, they weren't able to build up their inventories in February, March, April to be able to kind of weather the storm. They were taking a hit immediately that when the tariffs hit. And so this is continuing. And so for these small, medium-sized businesses, they don't have the luxury that Walmart has. And because this tariff scheme and tariff regime is continuing, it's just putting them behind the eight ball.
And we add to that, we've certainly talked about this on the program, that because of the fact there is no articulated goal or off-ramp, there's no triggering, like, what's the simpler way to say this? Donald Trump has not articulated a specific goal that can, once achieved, will then lead to rollbacks of the tariffs. So that makes the uncertainty even greater, as well as the timeline on the uncertainty. Nobody knows what the purpose is, and even if we did know, how do you even prognosticate how long that's going to take? And the uncertainty about that makes it even harder for small and medium-sized businesses. Listen, if Walmart's CEO is talking about we await resolution across our larger import markets, and as I understand it, Walmart only imports about like 30 to 35% of the stuff, either on an input basis or a final good basis, that they turn around and sell. If Walmart is having problems doing fiscal projections and planning because they need, quote, resolution across our larger import markets, small and medium-sized businesses are getting crushed. So with that, turning to agriculture and farming in the state of Wisconsin, Dr. Angelori, what does the future look like, and how is Donald Trump making it either better or worse for smaller farmers in states like Wisconsin?
So I'd mentioned, you know, we had the steel, aluminum tariffs. There have been tariffs since the February, March that's been impacting farmers. And so also fertilizer, herbicide, feed. So all those costs have been going up. And we've seen the impact on it. You know, we talked about the earnings calls about Walmart, but Caterpillar, John Deere, yes, they had their earnings call and they were losing millions of dollars. I just saw yesterday or today, John Deere is going to have layoffs of like 200 people. And this is in Illinois and Iowa. And this is like just going to be the start, because to your point, there's no articulated end goal. So we don't know how long this is going to last. And so that's what we have to worry about for the farmers. But then that's just on the cost side. There's the resolution on the other countries. Well, they're putting tariffs. They're spending less money. It's like the export economy is down. And so we have like exports are down, costs are up. And one thing that we haven't even talked about is the master deportation. So we think about the workforce and so the migrants. And so like you're losing all that. So you have exports going down, costs going up, and you're losing your workforce. And there's no end in sight. And so farmers are getting hit from all ends.
Yeah, it's like the Bermuda Triangle for smaller and even, you know, medium-sized corporate farms, right, with the exports going down because of retaliatory tariffs. Again, as you said, input costs and costs going up, and then a labor force, workforce problem. Boy, kind of a bleak outlook. It's interesting to me. I just want to say this. Big bull market response today from Jerome Powell's head faint towards potentially an interest rate reduction. What do you make of folks tying their opinion of the economy to what the stock market itself is doing? Is that a safe proxy for overall economic wellness in the United States?
No, everyone says stock market is not the economy. And it's the economy for very few people. But for the rest of us, we have to look at what's happening at the grocery store, what's happening with our job, what's happening, you know, what's in the general economy. And so stock market is never a good prognosticator of the economy.
Folks, that is my friend and now yours, Dr. Benga Adjelore. We help translate economic speak gobbledygook into just regular pragmatic language that helps you and your family and your businesses plan for the future. I can't wait to have you back, Benga. Have a wonderful weekend, my friend.
You too, and I can't wait to be back too. Thank you.
Awesome. We missed Ask Maggie this week. We'll be back with it next week, but stay tuned because Terry Barr joins me for this week's installment of What's Good, Local, and Overlooked in Wisconsin. We'll be back right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome, everybody, and it is the weekend, and it is the last segment of the Maggie Dawn Show, and I am so glad to have my good friend and yours, Terry Barr, back joining me with What's Good, Local, and Overlooked in the state of Wisconsin. Happy Friday, Terry, and thanks so much for being here with me.
Oh, and Maggie, happy Friday to you and to Jacob and all the listeners and the viewers of the stream. I've got a good one for you today because even this one surprised me. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay, let's do this. All right, you know, there's discussions earlier in the week about museums. I'm not going to go to that discussion and the things that Trump has said. I know that you will and you have and you yes. are. But what I want to talk about and how this kind of led me to thinking about museums in Wisconsin. So there is one in our state. It is called the Rahr West Art Museum. It's located in Manitowoc. It's one of the few that is owned by the city, and the city takes great pride in being part of this museum. It's celebrating 75 years this year, and they're doing it in a really interesting way. They have a festival. They do this festival every year. Have you heard of Sputnik Fest?
Well, I've heard of Sputnik, but Sputnik yeah. Fest is a new one for me, Terry. Tell me more.
Okay. This museum loves the whole fact that in September of 1962, Sputnik number 4 from Russia blew up and a huge chunk of it landed right in front of the museum in Manitowoc, Wisconsin. So this festival they do is now going to be this year in conjunction with celebrating 75 years of the museum. And I talked to Greg Vadney. He's with the museum. And what he tells me may surprise you even more. Here's Greg.
And for us as an art museum and historic mansion, it's a great equalizer because not everyone, and I would venture to guess most people, don't think that an art museum housed in a Victorian mansion is a place where they belong. It's snooty. It's like you have to have a beret when you walk in, right? And Sputnik Fest says, no, we're a place for everybody, and we don't take ourselves too seriously, and come on in. And it's a great way of swinging open those doors and telling everyone that they belong here. So for the museum, it's valuable. For our history, it's valuable. And really for our community history, that we have this thing that we can cling to that happened here and happened nowhere else on Earth.
Yeah. So Vadney says, I know too. He was so much fun to talk to. Vadney says people actually visit Manitowoc, coming in from all around the world when they hear about Sputnik landing, crash landing, basically,
yes,
right in front of the museum. There is a circle there noting where it landed. They have a copy of this portion of Sputnik in the museum. And now they have this festival where they invite people to dress up, however you want to dress up for a Sputnik fest.
Yeah, what is the, I don't know, what do cosmonauts wear? Is it different from astronauts from NASA? I don't know.
No, he said they even get people that like wear UFOs on their head.
Oh,
they
of course, wear, like, why not?
Sputnik thing on their head or on their whole body. They even have a doggy dress-up costume contest to, you know, dress up like a space dog of some sort. But I found it fascinating that in talking with Vadney, more people from outside of our state know about Sputnik landing, the Sputnik Fest, and this museum than we do. So I thought it's appropriate timing to bring this to your attention and everyone else. Sputnik Fest is happening on September 6th this year. It's a Saturday, all day Saturday. And this has actually been named, Maggie, one of the top five funkiest festivals in the country. That was by Reader's Digest. So they know more about this than we do.
Oh my goodness. Gosh, I miss me some Reader's Digest. I remember every time I would go over to my grandma's, I'd read all of her readers, like all of the like little book excerpts,
yes,
in the Reader's Digest. It was the
I
best thing.
Reader's Digest too.
Right next to the TV guide. You know what I'm saying? Like that.
Yes.
Where did, oh Lord. Well, that sounds absolutely amazing. Again, Sputnik Fest, never would have guessed, nor would I have thought that Sputnik Fest is A, in Manitowoc, Wisconsin,
yep,
and is B, being put on by an art museum, and made me see that there was an art museum anyways in Manitowoc to begin with, also a surprise. And I do want to give some love to Manitowoc, Wisconsin. One of my exes from college was from Manitowoc. His folks ran this incredible bar called The Linebacker in Manitowoc. So to all you Manitowocians, I don't know if that's the right word for Manitowoc, and linebacker regulars, it was so lovely to spend some time with you. Did a goodly bit of bowling, hanging out with the folks, and hanging out at the Linebacker with my ex and his fam back in the day. You all know who you are. I hope you're all doing well. All of my best to you. Such a fun little city, I have to say.
I agree. When I worked in Green Bay, we covered Manitowoc, but somehow this Sputnik thing still slipped under our radar.
Under the radar. Well, I'm so glad you've now put it on all of our radars. And speaking of which, Terry, I've got something that I absolutely want on your radar and on all of our listeners' radar for Monday. We are doing a very, very special installment of the Maggie Dawn Show. I was fortunate enough to see a band that is part of the girls rock movement here in Milwaukee, and we are doing an entire episode on Monday from the Cactus Club here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. We're going to have on girls and ladies who rock, these bands that have just been through summer camp. We're going to talk to the Cactus Club's owner. We're going to talk to the executive director of Girls and Ladies Who Rock. So join me on Monday for that. It's going to be a hoot because we all need a break from politics.
Absolutely.
And these politicians.
Oh, I'm so excited for you.
Thank you. Thank you, Terry, and thank you to each and every one of you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Pete Schwab is up next. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me, but it is always better when we stand together.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.